for freedom and safety for all, and real, true, peaceful existence, coexistence for every faith. I still remember my CD telling me the story of picking olives next to his Jewish neighbor. That's what I want. I don't want somebody being othered or seen as less than solely because they were born Palestinian. So I'm grateful for all of your voices in this movement. We know that many people around the world are with us, committed to ending the genocide in Gaza, apartheid in all parts of occupied Palestine, and recognizing humanity in every person.
That's Democratic Congressmember Rashida Tlaib of Michigan addressing the Jewish Voice for Peace National meeting in Baltimore. Over 2,000 people attended. That does it for our show. As we end the program, 20 years ago this month, Democracy Now! Published the first audio edition of our headlines in Spanish, Democracy Now! In Español. Those headlines are broadcast by hundreds of stations from the Americas to Europe and available as a podcast to this day. Today, we also translate our segment summaries, select transcripts, weekly column into Spanish, and produce Spanish language interviews. A huge shout out to our current Democracy Now! In Español team, Clara Ibarra, Igor Moreno, Ivan Incapié, and to Andrea Grace Conteras, who worked with us to launch Democracy Now! In Español 20 years ago. Special thanks to Maria Eva Blata, Veronica Gelman, Chuck Skurich. We hope you feel better, and all the interns who've contributed over the two decades. I'm Amy Goodman.
Hello, dear listeners. Oil for Kisses is a monthly program on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, that highlights the headier and weirder sides of underground metal, post-punk, DIY hardcore, and beyond. Every month features a different theme where we delve into the history of a specific genre topic or musical location, or simply churn out the best, brightest, and ugliest sounds from around the globe. Join me, DJ Krauthammer, every first Friday night, Saturday morning of the month, at midnight till 3 a.m. for Oil for Kisses to experience it for yourself. Only on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, federal funding may be denied if states, including Oregon, don't drop diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Oregon House Republicans confessed its staff grossly miscalculated revenue from leasing out unused Oregon Department of Transportation office space.
And in national news, the Pentagon will start removing transgender service people while a military ban is challenging in court.
I'm Eric Leuschner.
And I'm Dave Johnson.
Oregon House Republicans confessed its staff grossly miscalculated the revenue it believed the state of Oregon could generate by leasing out 70,000 square feet of unused Oregon Department of Transportation office space. Initial calculations by the Republican caucus placed the increase in potential revenue at roughly $56 million. The House Republicans estimated flawed was a counterproposal to a Democratic transportation funding plan sourced from tax increases to fund road improvements and other transportation programs. Oregon House Republicans offered a plan that did not include tax hikes, but proposed cuts to public transit, bike, rail, and climate-friendly initiatives. Sam Herskovitz, a Republican spokesperson for the caucus, said, quote, "The important thing to take away is that this building is currently sitting partially empty at the expense of Oregonians. Leasing the vacant space out, no matter what the revenue total may be, is more than what we are doing now," end quote. In reality, sources at the Oregonian discovered the leased building would likely generate less than $4 million in added revenue per biennium. Alex Roten, a local Salem commercial real estate broker, believes that even that figure is generous. Roten says a more reasonable two-year estimate would be roughly $1.7 million, but even the lower estimates may be high. Oregon, Oregon Department of Transportation says the Republicans estimated roughly 100,000 square feet of unused space. A spokesperson for the agency said the figure is actually closer to 11,000 square feet.
The message from U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy is clear. If states, including the state of Oregon, don't drop diversity, equity, and inclusion and stop giving undocumented immigrants IDs and driver's licenses, the federal government will deny federal funding, even federal funding for Oregon. Rather, Oregon infrastructure that was already slated for projects across the state. Oregon was promised a total of $1.6 billion in federal funding over the 2025 through 2027 budget cycle. The federal money, along with a share of Oregon's gas tax revenues, were supposed to go to Oregon Department of Transportation projects like the Interstate Bridge replacement and the expansion of Interstate 5 through the Rose Quarter. Duffy pointedly said such plans will not fly under President Donald Trump's administration. Quote, whether or not described in neutral terms, any policy, program, or activity that is premised on prohibited classifications, including discriminatory policies or practices designed to achieve so-called diversity, equity, inclusion, or DEI goals, presumptively violates federal law, end quote. Since Oregon is a sanctuary state, Duffy's mandate poses a threat to settled Oregon law and current state practices. Oregon is also one of several blue states that allow undocumented immigrants to obtain driver's licenses and IDs. Duffy's letter is silent on whether he expects Oregon and other states to rescind those licenses or stop issuing them altogether. As the Trump administration threatens to cut funding for food benefits, families with young children gathered at the Oregon Capitol for a snack-in event. Participants passed out snacks while urging lawmakers to pass Food for All Oregonians, a bill which would extend food benefits for all children in the state. Isabel Charlet reports.
Families gathered at the Oregon State Capitol for what they called a snack-in last week to call attention to child hunger across Oregon. Participants handed out snacks while urging lawmakers to pass Food for All Oregonians. The bill would extend food benefits to all children under the age of 6 living in the state, including immigrants and refugees. Rachel Lucille with Oregon Food Bank says state lawmakers need to respond to rising hunger and possible cuts to food stamps by the Trump administration.
Seeing kids at the Capitol building was really powerful to show these are the people that we're advocating for. And it shouldn't matter where you were born. Every child deserves nourishing, familiar food.
Research shows 1 in 6 children in Oregon don't have enough food, with visits to the food bank increasing over 30% last year. Opponents of the bill worry about the added cost, but supporters argue data shows every purchase made with food stamps generates $1.50 for Oregon's economy. Lucille says she has had the experience, like many parents across the state, of having to choose between paying rent and putting food on the table.
Now that I'm not in that situation, I still want to make sure that all of my neighbors and everybody across the state of Oregon is also not having to make those really hard decisions.
Andrea Williams is also with Oregon Food Bank. She says during the pandemic, rates of hunger fell thanks to government supports and have since increased since the funding stopped. She says feeding the hungry is a policy decision.
It is a choice that decision makers, lawmakers can make, whether or not kids could have access to enough food to eat.
Williams says the fate of the Food for All Oregonians bill hinges on an upcoming Ways and Means Committee decision. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Washington has joined 28 other states in requiring that religious leaders become mandatory reporters of child abuse. That legislation was a long time coming, having been rejected by Catholic groups before. KBOO reporter Kenny B. has the details.
Washington Governor Bob Ferguson signed a controversial bill that makes clergy members mandatory reporters of child abuse. This bill is facing pushback from the Catholic Church branch in Seattle due to confessions not being exempt. The Archdiocese of Seattle stated, quote, Catholic clergy may not violate the seal of confession, or they will be excommunicated from the church. All Catholics must know and be assured that their confessions were made sacred, secure, confidential, and protected by the law of the Church, end quote. The U.S. Department of Justice said they are launching an investigation into this new law, suggesting that they have violated the First Amendment rights of religious freedom. In the text of Washington's reporting law, clergy refers to anyone ordained by a religious group. However, confession has been singled out due to the long history of secrecy surrounding it. Currently, there are 28 states that include clergy and church members as mandatory reporters, while 22 do not. There are also consequences for not reporting abuse as a mandatory reporter. It could lead to fees and jail time or a combination of both. Consequences can get heavier depending on the severity of the abuse unreported. Washington Senator Noel Frame has proposed this bill two other times, but didn't pass due to disagreements about including confession. Noel said, quote, "Far too many children have been victims of abuse. The legislator has a duty to act and end cycles of abuse. When kids ask for help, we need to be sure that they get help. It's time to pass this bill once and for all," end quote. Thomas Plant, a psychologist and professor who has worked with the Catholic Church and written about the subject of child sexual abuse by church members, has weighed in. He says that removing the exemption for confession could unintentionally do more harm than good. Plant told CBS News that the confidentiality understood in confessions encourages those who have committed crimes to come clean and be referred to a psychologist. Without that assurance, Plant suspects that priests will stop offering confession, leading those who need this service to find it in other states. Seattle Archdiocese said they, quote, "agree with the goal of protecting children and preventing child abuse," end quote, and are committed to reporting it as long as it is information acquired outside of confession. After passing, this law will go into effect officially on July 27th. With KBOO Evening News, I am Kenny B.
Immigrant rights groups in Washington are calling for the release of Alfredo Lelo Juarez Zeferino, a prominent union organizer. They also want more transparency surrounding the increased ICE presence in Washington. Isabel Charlet reports.
Immigrant rights advocates are calling on state leaders to do more to protect Washington farm workers from U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, including the release of Alfredo Lelo Juarez Zeferino. Zeferino is a farm worker and well-known union organizer who was detained by ICE in March. Liz Darrow is with Community to Community Development, a Washington-based group that advocates for workers' rights. She says there's been increased ICE activity since March and wants the state government to take action.
We really want the governor and the attorney general to take an active role in providing for the public a better picture, because we really can't tell what's going on unless workers or their families reach out to us.
The Trump administration says ICE raids are targeting criminals, but critics point out that migrants with legal status and no criminal history are also being detained. Darrow says that Zeferino has no criminal record. Brenda Bentley, also with Community to Community Development, says one immigrant in Washington was taken by ICE as he was leaving church with his family. She adds agents have been seen parked outside of elementary schools.
It's also a really chilling effect in the community because people are afraid to drive anywhere to do the basic necessities that they need to do.
Zeferino has been detained for about 2 months and the charges against him are unclear. Darrow believes he was targeted because he has spent years publicly organizing farm workers to improve working conditions.
We see Lelo organizing all over the state and all over the country to try to help workers gain things like overtime and safety rules from heat stress and wildfire smoke.
Darrow's organization is calling for Governor Bob Ferguson to continue to enforce the Keep Washington Working Act, which restricts local law enforcement from enforcing federal immigration laws. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
The Pentagon begins removing transgender troops as legal battles continue. Congress works to fix a SNAP job training penalty. Advocates raise concerns over immigrant data searches. And U.S. officials report progress in trade talks with China. With more on the story, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. the United States has a massive $1.2 trillion trade deficit. So the president declared a national emergency and imposed tariffs. And we're confident that the deal we struck with our Chinese partners will help us to work toward resolving that national emergency.
Trade Representative Jamison Greer says he's confident negotiations between the U.S. and China, now started in Switzerland, can reduce the massive tariffs both have imposed. A new survey from Small Business for America's Future shows more than two-thirds of small business owners are worried about the impact the import taxes will have on the economy. Gladys Harrison, the owner of Omaha-based Big Mama's Kitchen and Catering, says her suppliers may have to raise prices beyond what she or her customers can afford.
They're telling me that they could see a 25 to 145% increase with these tariffs in what they're going to charge me for my seasonings.
The Supreme Court is preparing to hear arguments on President Donald Trump's executive order blocking some birthright citizenship. Most legal scholars, including many conservatives, say the 14th Amendment grants automatic citizenship to almost all children born in the U.S. to non-citizen parents. Trump's order is facing 10 lawsuits. The Supreme Court has ruled the administration's ban on transgender people serving openly in the military can, for the moment, go ahead. Navy veteran Lindsay Church is the executive director of Minority Veterans of America.
People are worried about what comes next, where they're going to live, what their healthcare situation is going to be, how they're going to be employed, how quickly they're going to be purged from the military.
Digital privacy advocates are warning immigrants about data searches at U.S. borders. Lam Tuivo, investigative reporter with Documented New York, repeats the advice lawyers are giving migrants.
Ask yourself what might happen if data that you have on your devices or that you have on your social media might be leaked to a Border Patrol agent.
Vo says there is also a clear pattern of the administration seeking personal data on immigrants from federal benefit programs, including Social Security and SNAP, even on people who don't qualify. A frayed ceasefire between India and Pakistan may be holding for the moment following U.S. mediation. Both countries are claiming victory in the four-day conflict over Kashmir, but have agreed to stand down as talks continue. Congress is trying to fix a flaw in food assistance policy. A change in a past farm bill meant that paid job training counted against SNAP eligibility. Leah Bacon at the Center for Employment Opportunities says they support a bipartisan bill to help people avoid that bind.
For far too long, people have really had to make an impossible decision to either put food on the table for themselves and their families or invest in their future through workforce development. That really can't be the status quo.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
Listening to the KBOO Evening News, stay tuned after the newscast for in-depth look at what PSU students think about President Trump's targeting of higher education. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knocks Radio. Tonight's weather, partly cloudy, 57 degrees with scattered rain, which will drop to 47 degrees by the evening. Tomorrow's weather will be a high of 64 degrees with a slight chance of showers throughout the day. Today in history, in 1820, an innovator of nursing who reduced deaths by improving living standards and hygiene for hospitals, Florence Nightingale, was born in Florence, Italy. The quote of the day is from nursing reformer Florence Nightingale, who said, quote, were there none who were discontented with what they have, the world would never reach anything better.
A federal court has temporarily halted a plan to transfer Oak Flat, a tribal sacred site in Arizona, to Resolution Copper, a proposed copper mine 60 miles east of Phoenix. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal court has temporarily halted the federal government's plan to transfer Oak Flat, a tribal sacred site in Arizona, to Resolution Copper. The transfer was expected to take place as early as June, Apache Stronghold, a coalition of Apache people, other Native people, and non-Native allies, filed an emergency request to halt the transfer while the Supreme Court considers the case. That request was granted Friday. The coalition has been fighting the land transfer for years, saying the copper mine threatens religious freedom, while Resolution Copper has touted jobs and an economic impact. New Mexico and Colorado recently created alerts for missing indigenous people. Now Arizona is poised to join them with its own turquoise alert. As Gabriel Pietrazio reports for the Mountain West News Bureau, a legislative bill awaits the governor's signature.
The House will now proceed to vote.
Had the turquoise alert already been law, Republican bill sponsor Teresa Martinez says it could have helped find 14-year-old San Carlos Apache Emily Pike.
Not only was she killed, but she was dismembered. And it breaks my heart that we, the state of Arizona, didn't even go looking for this little girl.
Another supporter is House Democrat Myron Soce from the Navajo Nation. He remembers 11-year-old Ashlyn Mike, who also went missing. Her 2016 death aided in bringing Amber Alerts to Indian Country.
This is for Shiyaja Emily Pike. This is for Shiyaja Ashlyn Mike and many others who are still missing. This is for you.
Gabriel Pietrazio, Phoenix.
Native experts in foraging for traditional foods are sharing some of their recommendations. Chuck Kornbach of Station WUWM reports.
In Papago Park, east of Phoenix, Twyla Cassador points to the base of a Palo Verde tree where small branches, dried leaves, and other plant matter have formed the ground nest of a desert wood rat. Cassador says the rodent is both a source of nutrition and knowledge.
And many of us may not think much about the desert wood rat, but as people that study environmental science or engineering, this friend of ours, also a delicious friend, will tell us about climate change.
Cassador is a traditional food forager and educator with the San Carlos Apache tribe. She explains to a tour organized by the Society of Environmental Journalists that other researchers have found that as the planet warms, the wood rat uses larger plant material to shade or insulate its home. But where the rat is plentiful, as it is here in the Sonoran Desert, it can also be a source of what Cassador calls pre-reservation food, food from before the years when the U.S. government forced Native people away from their longtime homes.
They took everyone away from the landscape where they originally foraged from and hunted from.
Helping Cassador with the effort to discover more traditional foods is Jeffrey Lazos Ferns, a naturalist and member of the Pascua Yaqui tribe. He points to blossoms and seeds on the Palo Verde tree.
These flowers, you can make tea out of them. Also, the pods, which you maybe see on some of the more younger trees out here, they taste like edamame, so you can eat them fresh off the tree, or you can peel them, boil them, put salt on them, or store them for the season that you actually do want to use them.
Lazos Fern says some larger cities like Tucson have started to plant more indigenous plants that need less water or no fertilizer and be a source of food or medicine. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
At least 10 people in the U.S. have been sickened in a listeria outbreak linked to ready-to-eat food products. The producer is voluntarily recalling several of its goods, including ready-to-eat sandwiches and snacks. This voluntary recall is specifically limited to products with use-by dates from April 22, 2025 to May 19, 2025. The 10 people who fell ill were located in California and Nevada, and they required hospitalization. The products themselves were sold in Arizona, California, Nevada, and Washington. At locations including hospitals, hotels, convenience stores, and airports, including airlines. Listeria symptoms usually start with 2 weeks of eating contaminated food. Mild cases can include fever, muscle aches, nausea, tiredness, vomiting, and diarrhea, while more severe symptoms may include headache, stiff neck, confusion, loss of balance, and even seizures. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced over the weekend that federal, state, and local officials are investigating the outbreak. allegedly linked to foods produced by Fresh and Ready Foods, LLC of San Fernando, California. Federal officials have been investigating the recent outbreak, but until now did not have enough evidence to identify a source of the infections. The investigation was reopened when FDA investigators found listeria in samples collected from Fresh and Ready Foods that matched the strain from the outbreak. Brand names of the potentially involved products include Fresh and Ready Foods, City Point Market Fresh Foods To Go, and Fresh Take Crave Away. Fresh and Ready Foods said it also removed equipment to address the issue.
The Pentagon will start removing transgender service members from the military after the Supreme Court said the administration could enforce the ban while the issue is challenged in court. Supporters of transgender service members in Maryland say this will negatively impact national security. Simone Perez reports.
The Pentagon will begin removing transgender troops from the military after the Supreme Court ruled last week that a ban could be enforced as lawsuits progress. In January, President Donald Trump signed an executive order banning transgender people from serving. As the Pentagon put the policy in place, it faced a number of legal challenges. Navy veteran Lindsay Church with Minority Veterans of America says the court's decision has left many transgender service members in Maryland in a difficult situation.
People are worried about what comes next, where they're going to live, what their health care situation is going to be, how they're going to be employed, how quickly they're going to be purged from the military. And all of these things are also happening at the same time that they're still wearing the uniform and continuing to carry out their jobs, whether that be here on deployment. They're taking care of our nation, and they're also wondering if we're going to have a job.
In the executive order, Trump wrote that transgender people lack the humility and selflessness to serve in the military. At an event last week, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth also said the military is done with pronouns. Some estimates put the number of transgender service members at higher than 15,000, just under 1% of troops. Opponents of the ban say nearly 75% of transgender troops have served for more than a decade, adding transgender people are twice as likely to have served in the military. Church says that if the Pentagon wants to have a lethal and effective military, then transgender participation is necessary.
You're looking at many, many, many years and a lot of investment that's going to be lost by the Department of Defense in the interest of bias. Most of this policy has been continued to be proved to be rooted in animus and bias and not in actual benefits to our national security.
A Gallup poll in February found 58% of Americans support allowing transgender people to openly serve in the military. That's a drop from 71% in 2019, largely driven by declining support among Republicans. I'm Simone Perez, Maryland News Connection.
A new Michigan State University study reveals lasting PFAS effects in Parchment, Michigan, where drinking water near an old paper mill landfill is contaminated. The man-made forever chemicals build up in the body and environment and never break down. We get details now from Mark Moran.
New research at Iowa State University shows elevated nitrate levels have an outsized effect on the state's most vulnerable populations. Studies show exposure to nitrates can increase the risks of birth defects and various types of cancer. ISU Water Resources Assistant Professor Leo Liu says nitrates, which are prominent in ground and surface water near commercial agriculture operations, exceed safe levels and affect Iowa's most vulnerable.
Such as people of color, low-income populations, elderly, and also children.
Despite their negative health impacts, the Iowa Environmental Council reports only 4% of public water utilities in Iowa have nitrate removal systems. The data show the presence of nitrates in the water is especially high in rural communities, and Leo says Northeast Iowa's Blackhawk County stands out in her research.
This county has very high nitrate in their treated water. They also have very high social vulnerability. So people living in that county are disproportionately exposed to high nitrate in their drinking water.
Her research includes an interactive map that shows which parts of the state have the highest nitrate pollution in their groundwater. Leo's work was published in Environmental Science, Water Research and Technology. I'm Mark Moran for Iowa News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 12, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Call or text us with your breaking news stories, and I just gave you that number. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dejon, Kenny B., Josh Salem, Dave Johnson, and Eric Leuschner. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Mark Moran, Zamon Perez, Kathleen Shannon, and Faraz Siddiqui. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
The 2025 Trump administration has been going back and forth with universities seeking to impose a conservative ideological agenda on higher education throughout their country. Universities like Princeton and Columbia were some of the first targets, more recently, Harvard University. In a lawsuit filed in April, Harvard fights back, arguing that the Trump administration's actions are unconstitutional. With higher education under threat across the country, we wanted to hear what some voices from Portland State University had to say.
What is your name, my friend?
My name's Quinn.
What is your name?
My name is Faith.
Okay, what is your name?
Isaac.
What is your name?
I am Milo Loza.
What is your name?
I'm Eli.
What is your name, my friend?
Torrin.
On April 11th, the U.S. Department of Education sent a letter to Harvard University with a list of demands.